The breach of contract, the consequences and remedies. What is this chapter about? It says every contract has correlative rights and obligations. That is, a right is of no value if it cannot be enforced in a court of law. So, what are the means, what are the ways, what are the various methods in the event of a breach of contract so that the aggrieved or the injured party has recourse to a court of law, and what will be the proceedings thereafter is what this chapter talks about. Let us now proceed. The remedies available to the aggrieved party. Suit for specific performance. Specific performance of the contract can be granted under the Specific Relief Act 1877. A suit for injunction. An injunction is an order of the court directing a person to do or refrain from doing some act which is the subject matter of the contract and which a party undertakes to do or not to do. Well, let me now explain what is suit for specific performance. It means the aggrieved party has asked the party at fault to redo the act all over again. Which means the aggrieved party tells the court, whenever monetary compensation cannot be estimated or money compensation is not adequate and cannot be estimated, the aggrieved party asks the court and the court directs the defaulter to specifically redo the act or perform the act all over again, which is called specific performance. But friends, specific performance is not allowed in certain cases. Firstly, when damages are an adequate remedy and monetary compensation is possible, specific performance will not be allowed. Directors in a company cannot do any act which is outside the object clause of the memorandum, and this cannot be redone because it's an act which is ultra vires and void. Any act by a trustee which is in violation of the trust, or any other activity which is one which is personal in nature cannot be redone. So specific performance can be granted by the court only in particular circumstances. A suit for injunction. What is an injunction? It's a stay order by the court. It is the breach of a negative term. A person says, I will not do something or I refrain from doing, and he does an act which he said he's not supposed to do. So the aggrieved party goes to a court of law and brings a stay order, which is called a suit for injunction. Let me illustrate this. We have a case of Warner Brothers versus Nelson. Nelson was an actor. He told the theatre company, I will have a contract with you for a period of 6 months, and I will not entertain any other contractual relationship during this period of 6 months. In breach of this contract, Nelson entertained contracts with other theatre companies. And one of them, obviously, wherein Warner was the plaintiff here who was directly concerned. He went to the court to bring about a stay order or injunction, and it was held. This was an adequate remedy because Nelson had undertaken with W, the Warner brother producer, stating that I will not act for anybody else but you. So when there is a breach of contract under such circumstances, a suit for injunction is normally entertained. Suit for damages, for the loss sustained by way of restitution and as a monetary compensation to the injured party. Suit for loss of profit, compensation. The aggrieved party is entitled to receive compensation from the party who has broken the contract, whether or not actual damage or loss is proved to have been caused by the breach. Quantum merit. Now, coming down to the second remedy, suit for damages. It means money compensation to be paid to the injured party, whereby it is due to the loss that arises in the normal course of things. Well, friends, we have a case study of Hadley versus Baxendale under Section 73 of the Indian Contract Act. H had a flour mill. The shaft in the flour mill was broken. He told Baxendale, a carrier, please go to Munich, a place, and have it repaired for me. However, Hadley did not mention that in the event of the flour mill being closed down, there would be a loss of profit in the flour mill or in his shop. Baxendale had a small delay, and therefore his returning with the shaft was after a week. Hadley filed a suit for loss of profit against Baxendale. The question arises, can he succeed for loss of profit? No. The court held, whatever are damages that arise in the normal course of things, which means the compensation shall be between the difference of the contract price and the market price on the date of the breach, but it will not be a loss of profit because the loss of profit was not contemplated by the parties at the time of the inception of the contract. So therefore, damages which arises in the usual or normal course of things and which are in contemplation of the parties, that is, which the parties have decided at the very inception of the contract that it shall be paid, only that can be claimed and nothing further. Now, we shall go to compensatory damages, to compensate or to make up the loss suffered by the party. Nominal damages, damages which naturally arise in the usual course of things from the breach are called nominal damages. These arise from all the reasonably foreseeable consequences of the breach. Exemplary damages, these are granted for injured feelings, mental pain, suffering, etc. Special damages, these arise on account of unreasonable damages. Now let me explain the various kinds of damages. The damages that can be claimed by the injured party are of the following kinds. One is ordinary damages, which arises in the normal or in the usual course of things as per Hadley versus Baxendale, rule number one. Special damages. If special damages are contemplated by the parties, that is, the parties have decided at the very inception of the contract that in the event of the breach, the aggrieved party is entitled to claim special damages, only then can it be claimed. We have a case of Simpson versus London Northeastern Railway. S had sent a few sample products for an agricultural show at a particular place. He told the railway company that these samples are required to be sent after the present exhibition to a further destination. The railway company obviously had a delay whereby the samples could not be sent. Can S claim special damages? Yes, because it was already mentioned to the railway company that any kind of a delay whereby the samples could not be forwarded to the further destination would result in loss to Mr. Simpson. So, since this was very clear, special damages can be claimed only when it is told to the other party and not otherwise. Nominal damages are damages which are obviously not very severe and therefore they are minor damages which can be recovered in the usual course of things, and therefore nominal damages are one which can be claimed normally by any party, but then it is just that the plaintiff would try to prove his point and therefore want to claim, because these are very minor damages that can be recovered. Exemplary, we call this vindictive. It is a kind of a punishment that is imposed, where normally exemplary or punitive damages cannot be claimed by the party unless there is a mental suffering. Any kind of agony whereby the banker refuses to honor the check of a businessman who has a reputation in the market, or any kind of a refusal by a person to marry, are areas wherein the reputation or goodwill is sought to be adversely affected, in which case exemplary damages can be awarded and not otherwise. Damages cannot be claimed for any remote or indirect loss, which means a debtor tells B, the creditor, I owe you money. Now B tells C, if I don't get it from A, obviously I may not be able to pay you. Now the transaction between B and C is something which is remote, in which A is not affected. So in such cases of a remote or a distant area which is not in contemplation or which is not a direct consequence, normally cannot be claimed. Finally, when we talk about damages, mitigation. The injured party is required to see whether he is able to reduce or try to mitigate or diminish the loss to the maximum possible extent. For example, in Hobbs versus London Southeastern Railway, H and his wife were traveling by train. The train is cancelled. It was not possible to transport his wife and children, and therefore they had to walk in drizzling rain to a distant hotel. This hotel accommodation, now can it be claimed? Yes, it can be claimed. Now, H's wife catches fever and is down with blood pressure or any kind of a mental agony. Now, this being remote cannot be claimed because it is not a direct consequence of the breach. So, well, in a nutshell, whatever damages are in the ordinary course or in the usual course of things, wherein it is the difference between the contract price and the market price on the date of breach, can be claimed by the aggrieved or the injured party. The rules for ascertaining damages under Section 73. When a contract has been broken, the party who has suffered by such a breach is entitled to receive from the party compensation for any loss or damage caused to him. The measure of damages, we have already said, is the difference between the contract price and the market price on the date of the breach. Such a compensation is not to be given for any remote and indirect loss or damage which is sustained by reason of the breach. In estimating the loss or damage arising from a breach of contract, the means which existed in remedying the inconvenience caused by the non-performance of the contract must be taken into account, which I said was Hobbs versus London Southeastern Railway. Now we go to a very, very important area, which is called quantum merit. What is the meaning of quantum merit? Quantum, quantity. Merit, merit. That is, how much ever is merited. That is, wherever a person has undertaken to do a particular task and this task becomes impossible or becomes void subsequently, the person who has already performed is entitled to recover the money on the task that he has already performed is called quantum merit. Quantum merit means as much as is earned or deserved or as much as is merited. A person can, under certain circumstances, claim payment for the work done or goods supplied without any contract or under a contract which is discharged by a breach of the other party. This is based on an implied promise and the remedy is not available to a party who breaks the contract. I'll just give you two illustrations on quantum merit. Proceeding further, where work is done under a contract pursuant to the terms thereof, no amount of compensation can be claimed by way of quantum merit. The claim of quantum merit can only arise from a request of services and acceptance of such services by the party. The doctrine applies in case of non-gratuitous acts where one part is performed and the remaining part is prevented from being performed because of the breach committed by the other party or where a contract is discovered to be void. Well, friends, I will just explain quantum merit in five important areas. Number one, where a contract is discovered void. The contract when entered is perfectly valid, but after it is entered, it becomes void. A, in consideration of B, obviously, marrying C, the daughter of B, says he will pay a sum of rupees 5,000. On the day of the marriage, C is dead and no more. The contract becomes void. Now B, you have received an amount of 5,000 for a marriage which is not going to take place. This money has to be returned back to A, is one instance. Secondly, any services which are received by a person and these services are implied under the contract which is for money has to be repaid. So it is a kind of a quasi contract where there is no offer, acceptance or consideration, but it is presumed, it is implied that the money has to be recompensated back. Supposing P, a publisher, has asked C, a writer, to write an article. Now P, the publisher, closes down his agency. Now C has already written 3 or 4 articles. Can he claim the money from P? Yes, he can claim. Because this is the area where whatever work he has done under the contract is under quantum merit where it can be claimed. Now, where contracts are divisible and a certain sum of money is due, what are the areas where quantum merit can be claimed? Wherever the area is divisible, but the money is required to be paid after the date of performance, the party cannot claim the amount of quantum merit because it was already agreed that money would be paid after due date of performance. If the party himself is at default, he cannot claim quantum merit. Consequences and remedies. The interest shall be by way of damages, penalty and liquidated damages, section 74. The exceptions are earnest money, which is treated as a part payment of the price. When a contract is completed, it represents a guarantee that the contract will be fulfilled. When can earnest money be forfeited? It must be given at the moment at which the contract is concluded. It represents a guarantee that the contract will be fulfilled and it's a part of the purchase price when the transaction is carried out. We have something called advance money and a security deposit. Now let me explain what exactly is liquidated damages and penalty. Liquidated damages and penalty. Under English law, we only have the concept of liquidated damages. By and large, here are two concepts which we need to understand. Liquidated damages mean compensation that is required to be paid, which is a pre-estimate of the loss that is likely to occur, and this is decided at the very formation of the contract, so that the injured party is aware that this would be the damage that is required to be paid is called liquidated damages. Penalty. It is something which is disproportionate to the damage and therefore is something in terrorem that we call it, which is undertaken by pressure or by coercion. A penalty is something which is severe so that A tells B, if I don't perform a task on a particular day, the damage will be 500. And I again enter into a contract that if I don't perform on this particular day, I shall pay 1000 rupees. Now this 1000 rupees is the sum of penalty, wherein it's an exorbitant amount, which is an unconscionable transaction, which is called as a penalty. The difference between earnest money and security. Earnest money is normally paid as a part of the price, wherein if an advance or a token money is given and it is appropriated towards the price, it is called as earnest money, which can be forfeited. A security. Now, security is a guarantee given by a party that in the event of any damage or fault at his end, definitely, he is accountable for the non-fulfillment of the obligation, so that it is a kind of a guarantee whereby the claim cannot be forfeited as far as security is concerned, but it can be forfeited as far as earnest money is concerned. Well, friends, I think we are very clear on the very various kinds of remedies which are available in the event of a breach of contract, which are of five main kinds. We have seen my first remedy, which we have observed, is by rescission. We then went as regards suit for damages. We proceeded with a suit for specific performance of a contract, a suit for injunction, and finally a suit on quantum merit. I hope you have understood what exactly are the different concepts in this chapter. Thank you very much.